Good evening, you all. I'm Kilowatt 2, Kilo Echo Yankee. That's Mel. Kilo 2, Kilo Echo Yankee. I'm K2 Romeo, India Whiskey. We get each other mixed up from time to time. Mel and Dick try to organize this thing called the Technical Net, in which guys get together, ham radio operators in particular, and discuss their favorite subject, ham radio, and all of the 26 different kinds of ham radio and how it all works. A person signs into the Technical Net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or comment for the net. We've already got KC2WGB and N2XJN signed in because they're running this rather elaborate set of experiments. Anyone else to sign in with a question or a comment, give me your call letters and name at this time. K2RIW listening.
November 2, Echo Oscar with a question.
N2MB, I got no questions. Good evening, Dick.
KC2YDT with a question.
KC2RFN, yes, I have a question.
Okay, the last two guys didn't give me a name. I know one of them is Alan. YGB, what is your name, sir?
Jack, it's Matt. KC2, Yankee, Delta, Tango.
Okay, Yankee, Delta, Tango. Good thing you gave me the phonetics there, Matt. And we've already got Rich and Barry. Okay, Rich, Barry, Matt, and Alan. Anyone else to give me your call letters and name at this time? Go right ahead. KQRIW in the TechNet. And we haven't heard from Mel yet. Is Mel there? Maybe he'll check in a little bit later. Okay, I just, a half hour or so ago, mailed John, Glenn, and Wesley a interesting website that I ran into, which does give you plotting capability of magnetic situations. Go over to Wesley first and find out what's the latest in the big experiment that's going on in Queens. N2XJN, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Good evening, everybody. N2XJN. I set up my equipment the way that I want to, and didn't have much time to provide the further advancement of the free energy device research. But I was in contact with John, and we were discussing a few things. I have a few questions. Since the next step of the lab is to establish the mechanical part of it, I acquired late, and I'm thinking about either CNC machine or the wheel. And the reason for that is that there is a number of forms or formers required for the coils, and according to the good advice of Eric Glenn, I should have something that is repeatable, not a mess on the table. Let me jump. So I ran to another problem. Some of the milling machines or CNCs, they have three phase, and I have a 220. Well, one phase is 110. Now, I thought that it would be worth of the effort just to discuss that issue, as it wasn't discussed, at least I don't remember that it was discussed. Three phase, one phase, what really is that, and how it works, and how can you make from one phase, three phase? And another question, a little bit catch. How can you make three phase from one phase, no capacitors, and no transformers? That's just a catch. Back to you, Dick, and to HR.
It is my belief that one of the great advancements that Mr. Tesla did was to invent three-phase power. If I had, for instance, a 110-volt RMS sine wave, and I start three of those sine waves, one of them a little bit delayed in time, another a little bit more delayed in time, so that they are each 120 degrees apart. And what good old Mr. Tesla realized is that if I have three coils that are the stator for a rotary magnetic motor, I got three saddle windings, and the three saddle windings are offset by 120 degrees. And if the power going to them, the three-phase power, phase A goes to the first winding, phase B goes to the next winding that's offset 120 degrees, and phase B is electronically offset by 20 degrees. And the same thing with phase C, offset by 240 degrees, both electronically and mechanically. When I feed my three-phase power into those three coils, and if I microsecond by microsecond figure out what's going on, the power going to those three coils sets up a single instantaneous magnetic field. At one instant of time, that magnetic field might be aimed up toward 12 o'clock, so to speak. And an instant later, it's going to be toward 1 o'clock. An instant later, it's going to be toward 2 o'clock. The net result of having three coils that are offset mechanically and offset electronically is that you're making a single magnetic field that rotates around the clock in a very characteristic cyclic manner, a very high fidelity manner, so that now if I put, let me drop, I put a squirrel cage rotator, a rotor, in the middle of that magnetic field, and if that squirrel cage rotor is sufficiently conductive, or if it's a set of permanent magnets in that rotor, in either case, the rotor will follow the rotating magnetic field. Depending on how I wire it, A, B, C, going to coils 1, 2, and 3, I will have an extremely clearly defined clockwise rotating magnetic field. I don't need a starter winding. I don't have to do anything to ensure that the motor turns in the right direction. It will rotate clockwise, and it has no choice. The squirrel cage rotator, where it's got a little bit of a slip angle to it, instead of rotating 1,800 RPM, it'll rotate 1,750 RPM. If it was a steady-state magnet for the rotor, it would be a synchronous motor, and it would turn exactly 1,800.000 revolutions per minute. If I reverse the windings of one of the three windings, I reverse the A, B, or C winding, the two wires going to it, I now will have a clearly defined counterclockwise rotating magnetic field, and the machine will run in the other direction. So when I'm making a motor out of three-phase power, I get very high efficiency, I get an extremely clearly defined direction of rotation, and obviously, whenever you can make a motor do that, you can do a generator. If I've got a single magnetic coil for the armature, and it rotates, and I take out the voltage from the three windings that are the stator, I'm now doing a three-phase generation. And three-phase generated power is what we have down most of our streets throughout the United States. The actual main power wiring, the 1350 or whatever it is voltage, the so-called distribution voltage, has phase A, phase B, and phase C, and each one of us...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
In general, each one of us as a private citizen is connected to one and only one of those phases. My particular pole pig transformer on the top of my utility pole out in front of my house, feeding me and maybe two neighbors, might be connected to phase A. And that particular transformer, let's assume now that it was 1,350 volts. I'm not sure what the primary voltage is right now. But that voltage going to the primary gets stepped down to the secondary winding. The secondary winding on most wiring through private houses throughout the United States is a 230-volt wire, 230-volt secondary winding with a center tap. The three wires coming into your house are the so-called neutral, which really is the center tap, and the two ends of that 230-volt winding, which gives you approximately 115 volts each side of ground. And you normally wire half of your house on the positive side and half of your house on the negative side. If you did a careful phase measurement with an oscilloscope, looking at the neutral versus the each side of the 220 line, the phase A and phase B, the red wire and the black wire, so to speak, is the way it's usually wired, you'll find out that those two wires are exactly 180 degrees from each other, not 120 degrees. In other words, we really have a single phase coming to our house with center tap. People will make the mistake of calling it two-phase. It really is one phase, plus and minus, so to speak, the red wire versus the black wire compared to neutral. Now, if you've got machinery that needs three-phase wiring, and that could be the high voltage power supply for a traveling wave tube, many of them require that. Quite a few rotary machines like lathes and drill presses and whatever, funny job. To make truly three-phase wiring, 120 degrees separation between the three phases in a private home is difficult. You call up Con Ed or LIPA and you tell them you want three-phase wiring in a private home. They think you're running a business, and for the most part, they will not give it to you. There are a few houses in Staten Island, I believe, that are running on two phases. In other words, they don't have 230, 115. They've got some other combination of the two voltages because two of the three phases are brought into their homes, and therefore they've got slightly crazy voltages. But to really make three-phase power, there's ways of doing it with a rotary machine where it's an ordinary motor running on one phase for the motor, and it's got a three-phase generator connected to that shaft. There's a rotary technique for doing it, and it can be done electronically. You can make an inverter, which has three phases to it. They tend to be kind of expensive. There are tricky ways by which you can run a three-phase machine on one single phase. You don't get anywhere near the full power output. If you've got a machine that's capable of 2 horsepower, and you only want 1/2 horsepower of it, there are tricky techniques by which you can run your three-phase machine on one single phase, and of its three sets of windings, you're really only going to use up one or two of those windings, so to speak, and you're going to be cheating a little bit, and you're not going to get full power out of the machine. There are ways of doing that, and of the people who are listening to me, hopefully a couple of you guys have gone through this procedure of getting three-phase power to your particular lathe, the drill press, or whatever in the house, and maybe you guys have got some suggestions as to the best ways to do it. If so, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
KC2WGB.
Okay, I heard both John and I think I heard Mel. Mel, you may not be up to running full power. John first, KC2WGB. Go right ahead, John.
Yes, Dick. Residential home, if you have more than 7.5 horsepower requirement, you can get three-phase into your house. You have to have a load letter and prove that you're going to be able to use it. You don't have to be commercial. Now, as far as if you buy lathes or milling machines and you don't want to go through that nightmare, you're better off changing the motor over to a single-phase 220 motor, 230 motor, and buy the horsepower you need and do it that way, wired correctly. Because if he goes to solid-state generation of three-phase, like you said, it's expensive. If he buys rotating mechanical converters, there's maintenance, and that's not cheap either. So there's really no cheap, easy way out.
I think I agree with that, John. What little investigation I've done, in my particular case, I own a couple of very high-power traveling wave tube X-band transmitters, but each one of them wants three-phase power, and the even more stringent requirement when it comes to high-voltage power supplies is that the three phases must be extremely carefully matched in voltage and phase in order to properly run the high-voltage power supply. A very strict requirement. I think it was Mel was the other person signed in. I wonder if you've got more than one phase in your house or in your neighborhood, and how have you done it, Mel, if it was you? K2KEY, K2RIW on the TechNet. Okay, I thought I heard Mel's voice in there. There was another person who was checking in when I asked for help on three-phase power. Who was that?
KC2MDP, Steve.
Okay, Steve, you're a little bit noisy. You may not be running high power, or the antenna might not be aimed. You're about 20% noise. We're hearing you pretty well, so go right ahead, Steve.
Got to let it drop. I'm on an HD, Dick. Yeah, the best suggestion is if it's easy enough, is change the motor. Of course, like the other station said, those phase converters can run into big bucks. If it's easy enough, yeah, that's the best suggestion is change the motor to, 240. Looking at it's a lathe machine. Is this possible? I would imagine this is Leslie. If you can look at that, and see what kind of motor it is, if it's easy enough to change, You know, if you could even tell me, you know, what type motor it is, I could probably tell them where to get one. Back to you, Dick.
A good suggestion, Steve. I'm a little bit worried that if I know Wesley and John, they're probably buying a German-made, fairly elaborate machine, and to get a motor that will be a form, fit, and function replacement of the single-phase motor for their three-phase motor, I'm going to guess that that's not going to be easy. I do remember seeing an article, and I'm trying to remember the call letters of the guy who lived in southern New Jersey who did it. Can't remember the call letters, can't remember the name. He's a famous guy on 432 and 1296 living in southern New Jersey who recently moved. Anyhow, he had a three-phase high-power lathe, and he found a tricky way to run it on one phase as long as you only wanted a fraction of the normal horsepower output. There is a tricky way of doing it, not recommended, but it can be done. I'm going to eventually think of the guy's call letters and his name. I'll eventually find an article on how he did it. It can be done, but it's not easy. I know he needed some tricky starting procedures to go through to make sure the machine was rotating in the right direction. Once he got it rotating in the right direction and applied the power to one single phase of the three-phase motor, the motor would, instead of turning at 1,800 RPM, it turned at 750. As I said, it produced a fraction of the horsepower, but it did run, and it can be done. Let me pass it back to you, Wesley. I am guessing that this German-made machine, which probably is not brand new, to find an electric motor that's one single phase that will mechanically fit in there, that could be a bit difficult. N2XJN, KQRIW in the TechNet.
N2XJN. Well, no, I have no problem with my lathe. What I have might have a problem is with the CNC that I'm thinking about buying. It's a good deal. If we have somebody who is a professional with lathe and with the milling machine, I would appreciate if they say something is a horizontal machine. So it could create a center, like a milling center. The machine is a miniature version of the huge one made by, I believe, Bradley. And that machine, no, Russell and Gilman, let's say American made, and a good American made. The machine never cut any steel because it was running only on the shows. So it needs a table and stuff, let me drop. But it looks like it does have a three-phase motor. So I was thinking, what is the difference between 220 and three-phase power supply? And then you said that the speed of the motor will actually diminish. Well, I would love if you guys correct me with the statement. Increasing 60 hertz to 120 gives me twice much of the speed. Talking about the frequency increase. The simple explanation is, what is the difference? Well, if you have a three-phase connected via load to neutral using three separate loads, then you have created three separate single-phase power supplies. Hence the term three-phase, single-phase. So, the great deal of difference between three-phase and the single-phase circuit. Is to provide an alternating current with the voltage of current flowing in flowing a sine wave, then is starting at zero, rising to the maximum, say 220 volts, then decreasing to zero, followed by the voltage rising again by a negative direction, or minus 220 volts. That's how I understand that. And in a single phase circuit, that just keeps repeating based on the frequency, let's say 60 hertz. That's 6 times per second. So in the three-phase circuit, this occurs with each phase, three-phase voltage rising, falling negative and increasing the opposite direction. So it's one way of doing that. Well, the other one is the three-phase, how do they call it, a three-phase converter. And although these machines are pretty expensive, you can get them for $60 if you're lucky on eBay. Depends from the power. But I'm waiting for any kind of comments in this matter. So what if we increase the frequency? We're losing speed, but then we're increasing the speed. Back to you, John. Dick, enter here.
Okay. There is no difference in frequency. In other words, almost all domestic power distributed to citizens in the United States is running at exactly 60 hertz, plus or minus a microhertz, if you know what I mean, but exactly 60 hertz. Yes, an awful lot of Europe runs on 50 hertz power, but we run on 60 hertz power. If I look at the normal wiring of my house, and I look at one particular socket, like the one in the ham room here, and if that particular socket is giving me 115 volts at 60 cycles, and that may be connected to the so-called black wire coming from the transformer on the telephone pole out in front of my house. The telephone pole transformer in front of my house takes the higher voltage primary, which is something like 13 kilovolts in some cases. Anyhow, there's a much higher voltage on phase A, B, and C running down the telephone poles down the street, and my particular transformer is connected to only one of those phases. So there's something like, let's make a guess, 13 kilovolts on the primary of that transformer. The secondary of that transformer is a 230 volt winding with a center tap. The two ends of that winding, once they get into my house and they get into my fuse panel, one of those ends of the transformer wiring is red and one of them is black. The neutral, the center one, quite often is made white. But red and black are 230 volts away from each other, but each one is 115 volts per se to neutral, to ground, because it's the left side or the right side of the secondary winding of that center-tapped transformer that is feeding my house.
So, repeater, timeout, cancel.
Okay, turn. And each of those phases are 180 degrees apart because they're opposite ends of the same transformer. Classically speaking, that is one single phase. People will make the mistake of calling it the red phase and the black phase, the in phase and the outer phase. But it's very different than the three-phase wiring, which is 120 degrees apart. Bet you've got a much better way of explaining all this, Eric, so go right ahead. K2EJ, K2RYW in the TechNet.
No, I was listening to this. I couldn't get back to you, but I've had a couple of installations where I had to create three-phase power, and I went to the site that I usually go to. How many kilowatts of juice do they need, and what voltage?
I believe 1 to 2 kilowatts is the maximum.
What's the voltage?
220. Three-phase.
How much current? Or how much power?
2 kilowatts the maximum.
How many horsepower?
I didn't hear the question.
How many horsepower?
Have no idea. The guy specified in kilowatts.
So what'd you say? 2 kilowatts?
Yeah, between 1 and 2 kilowatts.
All right, I can send you a link to a rotary phase converter that gets you 3 kilowatts on a 5 horsepower motor, $300. Not too bad.
Oh, not too bad at all. Apart from that, there are digital phase converters, and these devices, they have ability to increase the frequency. So with increased frequency, increasing the speed. And that was the nature of my question. Back to you.
You don't want to do that. And you really don't want a solid-state device for a motor, unless it's 3 or 4 times the size of the motor, because your startup current will kill the damn thing.
Yeah, what Eric was referring to is a common problem that people in the industry know about, but it's not well advertised, and that is a solid-state cycloconverter, something that makes three-phase power out of one-phase power with electronics. Those kinds of machinery, those kinds of electronic circuits, work extremely well with a pure resistive load. A motor is not a pure resistive load. At the instant you first try to turn the motor on, locked rotor, it's almost a dead short circuit. And once the motor gets rolling, it's primarily an inductive load, not a pure resistive load. It's got a significant phase angle, and the solid-state circuitry, unless it's got a lot of built-in protection, cannot tolerate that. You'll get a lot of failures. So if you really have to have three-phase power, using a rotary machine to generate the three-phase power has a lot going for it. I have, since he only needs a small fraction of the horsepower output of his CNC machine, there's a slim possibility he could run it on one phase if he goes through a slightly spooky starter procedure. I wonder if you've heard about some of those techniques, Eric, and maybe you've got some opinions for and against. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Yeah, there's a couple of ways of cheating, but I don't like it. You know, if I had to use them on transmitters that were, you know, being run temporarily on a single phase. It's just a combination of capacitors and transformers, and it's not very nice. I mean, and motors, you know, it's not a good idea, especially the way the motors are wound, three-phase motors, or the way the poles are set up. You're really not creating a balanced magnetic field around the armature, so it's not really a good idea. Can be done, though.
I understand that both of you, actually, you recommend one motor, single phase, running three-phase motor by belt, and producing manufacturing three-phase. Is that correct, Dick?
KE2MDP. Steve recognized, but Eric first. Go ahead and answer that one, Eric.
Say it again for me, Wesley.
Yeah, he was saying that if he has a belt drive or maybe a direct shaft drive from a single phase motor, which in turn goes into a generator, he didn't use those words, the three means, a motor generator set generating the three-phase power, and then that in turn runs a CNC machine, that's one possible way to go, and I think that's essentially what you were recommending. Is that true, Eric?
I'm telling
him
to send 300 bucks. You stick it in his box. You stick in the input voltage is 220, the output voltage is three-phase, 220. It actually can be anywhere from 208 to 240. And it's $300. And it's self-contained. It has permanent bearings. Although I do recommend oiling them every 10 years. But it's a lot of no hassle. And it also will deal with any kind of startup surge or loads, especially a CNC machine where you can run into something and the motor stops and it becomes like a dead short. And, you know, the only thing that happens is the motor gets warm, the thing slows down, and, you know, it can't deal with the load, and the breaker in it will pop. So, you know, it's a lifetime of good three-phase power without much fuss and bother.
KC2, QAQ.
Glenn also recognized, but you just brought up an extremely good point, Eric, and that is when you're running a computer numeric controlled machine, it's running a computer program. Almost always, somewhere in the middle of that program, there's a whole bunch of starting and stopping going on. So if you use any of these hokey techniques for trying to run a three-phase motor on single-phase power, the startup procedure is very spooky, and each one of those startups is capable of giving you a hang-up. So therefore, this rotary technique that you're talking about for $300 sounds like an ideal way to go. What's the brand name? Where do you go to buy that? Over to you, Eric.
This is DPC with a comment. All right, the website is TemcoIndustrialPower.com. They make good stuff, and I've used their stuff. It works real well. And the model number that's your price, add to cart, is $295. And go to their website, and they offer all sorts of stuff beyond, you know, they're into three-phase transformers and this and that and the other thing. But they're a good source of rotary converters. They also have variable frequency solid-state converters that are designed for motors, but they're a little bit more expensive. Although if you you're doing a 100 power motor, it's a little cheaper. But I think this $300 box for Wesley is just what he needs, and he can kill it all he wants, and he's never going to get into trouble.
This is the model number. Give me that spelling. T-E-M-K-O. Tango, Echo, Mike, Charlie, Oscar. Is that the name of the company? Eric, go ahead.
Tango, Echo, Mike, Charlie, Oscar, industrialpower.com.
Okay, and Wesley wants the model number of the $295 machine.
X-ray Robert, the number 3.
Okay, lots of good information. All right, when people are giving suggestions to Eric now, I mean Wesley, we've got three people in order, Steve, Glenn, and Hal in that order. Steve first, KC2MDP. Go right ahead, Steve.
Okay, I just got a question for Wesley. Is there any kind of blade on this thing? Are you sure it's three-phase? You said it was 240 volts. I know in the United States, I don't know about abroad, in the United States there is no such thing as, you know, as, I think it's never 220 actually. But three-phase, you got three-phase Y, which is 208, and you have three-phase Delta, which is 240. There should be a plate on there that specifies voltage, specifies, I would imagine, wattage or amperage. And the plug on it, how many prongs does the plug have on the end of the cord? Back to you.
Okay, Wesley, if you were able to hear that, you able to answer those questions? You got it, Wesley?
I did not. Would you please repeat the question?
He wants to know the information plate that's on the CNC machine. Does it say 208 or 240 voltage? Does it say Y or Delta wiring? How many prongs are on the power cord? Is it three wires or four wires? Over to you, Wesley.
Okay, interesting. This information was not provided. Only what I would have provided by the seller is that it's 110, 220, and it's one of the machines that I'm... So this one is no problem, one phase. The other machine is 220, three phase. That's the information. I don't know if it's star or it's delta. That I don't know so far. Thank you.
Three or four wires, Wesley.
He said he doesn't know. He hasn't bought it yet. But over to you, Wesley.
Yeah, the guy wants $4,000 for it. The machine originally was $40,000. The big version is not less than $50,000. And I'm trying to beat it down to $1,500. And in the meantime, I'll ask you the question, but thank you very much for the information. There was Hal also and Glenn, they wanted to add something, so they expect you.
Yeah, Glenn's the next person. KCQQIQ, you got it, Glenn.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Good evening, Wesley, and everybody on the net tonight. I ran into this problem a few years back where I was given a lathe and had a three-phase motor on it. I thought about, you know, being a power supply engineer, the idea to design something electronic or use a motor control. And I started looking at it and started adding up some of the expense to it. And after a while, I ran into somebody that I was speaking to who gave me a much better suggestion. And this is what I wound up eventually doing, was I found a place in Inwood that winds motors. And I basically just disassembled the motor and the shaft out of its, you know, mounting. I brought it down, and they took my three-phase motor, wound it to a beautiful single-phase motor, in the same case, put it right back in, wound it up, and it worked absolutely beautiful. And that's just one person I went to, and I'm sure that if you look on the internet and do a search for electric motor rebuilders, you'll find that there's quite a few of them out there, and you'd be amazed at how well and fast they can rewind and remagnet your motor into a nice single-phase unit, and you'll be in action in pretty short time. Back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
That's another attractive-sounding solution there, Glenn. How many horsepower was that motor, and roughly how many dollars did it take, and how long ago was that? Over to you, Glenn.
Come on.
Yeah, that was about 5 years ago, Dick, and the place was in Inwood. I can't remember for the life of me what the name of the place was. It was somebody pointed it out to me fellow electrician kind of pointed it over to me and was like, ah, there's a good place that does this sort of thing. And if I remember, it only cost me about $60 to do, and it was a basically a 3 kVA, you know, three-phase motor. And I think when it came back, it was a little bit less. I think it was more like a, you know, 220, you know, 220, 240 winding at about 2 kilowatts thick. And, yeah, 5 years ago, and about $60.
Very interesting. Okay. A very nice possible approach. Hal, how do the guys in California solve this problem? You've got it, Hal.
YWK6DPZ. Wesley, why don't you just see if you get another motor, either 220 or 110, maybe easier if we could get motor mounted in the machine, just go down the road. Don't worry about rebuilding the motor or developing three-phase for it. Comment. That's how we do it in California.
But the problem is that the motor is a running shaft, that main shaft from the mill, and it does have a mounting holes into it, and the flinches into that. So just take any motor and try to get this motor with the appropriate speed that it does have by itself before the gearing, and it is the shaft is at the same diameter, and it is mounted on the bolts that actually fit into that. If I want to make then the middle plate that will be actually something like interface, it will cost me much more than I think. I believe that the good idea is what Eric said and what Glenn said. Yeah, if it's $60, even if it's $300, it's worth the money. I mean, the machine is extremely valuable stuff. I just am hesitating of spending $4,000 on it. Just want to wait till everybody will be tired with it. Back to you.
Comment.
Okay, I heard a whole lot of people, but I think I heard John. Go ahead, John.
Yes, Dick, thank you. He said it's around a 2002 machine, a circa 2002. All motors now are standard mounts. Basically, if it's a Ramsey or a Neckord, they have either C-mounts, T-mounts, M-mounts. As long as he buys a 110 or a 220 motor, single phase, with that mount, it will mount into that machine. Most of them have standard interface. There's no more transition plates needed nowadays.
I'm at K2GJE. K2GJE. Start over your name and then your comment, sir.
This is Ed. Could I speak up now?
We're hearing you very well, Ed. Go right ahead.
Okay, very good. You just don't take the motor out of a CNC machine. You can take the motor out of a lathe that is belt-driven or gear-driven, but not out of a CNC machine. A CNC machine has speeds and feeds. That chuck can go from 1 RPM up to sometimes 20,000 RPM. They feed these machines three-phase, but they feed different frequency to the motor to get all the speeds. I don't recommend any hokey three-phase power. These machines require real three-phase power, and if you only have single-phase available, use a rotary converter. I know I had a 50 horsepower, three-phase, they were lathe. Over.
Okay, so rewording what Ed just said, Ed is strongly recommending you take Eric's approach. That is, you buy the $300 XR3 rotary converter device made by Temco IndustrialPower.com, where it really gives you three-phase power. Because I'm getting the impression that built inside of the CNC machine is gearing and belts and pulleys, which give you some of the speeds, but some of the other speeds apparently are done by the CNC machine itself operating,
hey, Dick,
operating as a cycloconverter in order to make the machine run faster and slower. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I don't think he's buying a CNC machine. I do think he's buying a just standard mill of a genuine manufacturer. And I don't know about the gentleman that said about standard motor mounts, but the stuff that comes from Europe that I've seen have all different kinds of mounts. So, you know, You'd have to check that out before you did that. But I don't think he's dealing with a CNC machine. And besides, if you've ever seen a 3-horsepower or 5-horsepower stepper, it's something to behold.
When you say stepper, you mean a stepper-type motor, which in other words is being fed as a brushless DC motor. Is that sort of what you're saying? And by the way the electronics feeds those windings, you make the motor run at various RPMs. Is that what you're saying, Eric?
Yeah, on some of the biggest CNC machines, the table or the devices that move the material, not the cutting motor. The cutting motor is a big motor, but the table motors are a giant stepper. And, you know, there's a whole lot of electronics that go with it. And, you know, I think they're like a half a degree steppers. They're pretty amazing big motors.
And do those motors require three-phase power for running their electronics over to you, Eric?
For the table, no. That's, you know, they're all run from a DC power supply. Though the main motors usually have three-phase power going into it, you know, the cutting motors or the turning motors, and the power supply that makes the DC for the steppers is got three-phase input.
Let me respond to that. This is a three-phase CNC machine with a control and with a computer in it, and it was manufactured by Gilman for trade shows. So it was miniature of the big machinery, and it can be used as standalone horizontal milling center, and it could be mounted to the Precision Grant steel plate. So actually it was running only the show. So this stuff is not used at all, but it's extremely well done. It's American-made machine. Back to you, Dick.
Hey, if it's a real CNC machine, then you need real three-phase power to control the main spindle.
And therefore, your ChemcoIndustrialPower.com is probably the best recommended technique to get three-phase power of a only one-horsepower category into his private home. I think that's sort of what you're saying, Eric. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that small one will actually handle a 5-horsepower motor, which is probably more than it needs. But, yeah. You know, if it's a true CNC machine, you're not going to be changing motors because the speed of the spindle motor is usually electronically controlled, too.
That's the XR3 device that I think you said is good up to 5 horsepower. It's beginning to sound to me like this could be 150 pounds worth of steel. That combined with this 150-pound, 240-watt high-power audio amplifier he bought recently, plus the weight of the CNC machine, he's going to have to put lolly columns between the floor of his house and the basement because he's getting some pretty heavy stuff. What's your guess as to the weight of that XR3 that you're recommending, Eric? Go ahead.
100 pounds.
100 pounds?
Yeah, that's pretty light.
Okay. When you add up all the weight that he's adding to that control room of his, heavy. you may have to reinforce the floor. Start considering that. Lolly columns are not very expensive, Eric. I mean, Wesley. N2XJN. What a laboratory being created here. K2RIW. You got it, Wesley.
Well, it's correct. I need to negotiate the price. I'm not willing to pay $4,000 for it, and I believe many people wouldn't buy that. The reason for that is a horizontal lathe made as a turning center, but it does not have a table. But the table is only $700. Not everybody knows about it. with the stepper motors as well. As far as I know, the stepper motors are being operated with the frequency changer. So, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, most of the CNC mills that I've ever played with, including the one that I have downstairs, the motor, well, in my case, is actually a three-phase motor that's generated electronically. And they change the speed by changing the frequency.
I think they call that a cycloconverter. So that particular cycloconverter is made to power that particular motor of that particular machine. and therefore they're compatible. You just go out and buy a solid-state, three-phase cycloconverter and simply add it to your particular motor. There's a number of ways that you can get yourself into trouble. So he's not doing that, and but for those who do, I think you've got to go a little bit careful. I've heard too many horror stories of the inductive load and locked rotor starting characteristics are not necessarily compatible with a solid-state three-phase inverter. Anyone with any further questions or comments on this subject, give me your call letters and name right now, K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay, I think I heard on the input somebody who doesn't have the right PL. He's not coming through the machine.
There's no PL.
Okay, I did hear somebody on the input, though. Maybe that was Doug. Was that you, Doug? S-A-Y, go ahead. Okay, I'm not hearing that person right now. Okay, so good luck with that project, Wesley and John. You guys got your hands full. What a laboratory that's being created there. The next person that was on the list was Rich N2EO. Go right ahead, Rich. What's happening in Whitestone? K2RIW on the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, good evening, N2EO. First off, I want to thank Barry publicly, N2MB. He was here today. We put up the 432 antenna. He put up the 6-meter antenna and the 2-meter antenna previously at Glen Martin Tower. He did a very, very, very nice job. I've been trying to encourage Barry into going into the antenna installation business. He does wonderful work, and I wanted to publicly thank him. Dick, I wanted to get a quick education on EMP, X-raying of packages. Tell you what happened. I got a package here that was damaged, I believe, by either X-rays or EMP by UPS. You may remember last year when my father passed away, I got in touch shortly after with a lady I know in Florida. I was both 60 years old. I met her when I was 20. We were both 27. I told you we were webcamming. We webcam every day, or almost every day, and we see each other. We talk on the phone. It's a good relationship. Anyway, she's been liquidating a ham station, and she sent up an ICOM a number of months ago that I sold for her for $1,300 on eBay. And now she sent up a Yaesu FT-1000D. And when it arrived, I turned it on. It was dead. The digital readout did not light up. The receiver was dead. The transmitter was dead. Let me let it reset. Yaesu won't work on it because it's more than 10 to 12 years old. It's a very desirable radio for PX's, contesters. We were going to sell it on eBay for $2,000. I was going to offer it to a Weimark member first. And anyway, it went to Hal, K6DPZ and Land Air Communications, to see what happened. And he went into it. He found the microcontroller was totally dead. Nothing, no clock pulses, no data coming out of the processor. So Hal said, and I think he's on frequency, that he's run into situations where since 9/11, UPS, I guess FedEx too, they randomly scan packages, and we think it was either hit with X-rays or some type of EMP. I wonder what. I'm trying to get an education what's being used, because I had an adjuster here from UPS. They took pictures, and they're denying the claim because they said there's no physical damage. Nothing bent, broken, cracked, etc. I contacted Florida Governor Charlie Crist's office, who has a consumer helpline. They steered me to the Department of Consumer Affairs in Florida, and I did an online complaint against UPS in Brookville, Florida, which is where the package went to. I wonder if you know, Dick, what it might have been. Hal can tell you more about it if you want to turn it over to him. He looked at the radio, There's a massive amount of chip damage, CMOS chips destroyed.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Yeah, Hal's on frequency, K6DPZ. Hal, I presume this is not one of those kind of rigs that has a dynamic RAM where a lithium battery has to hold up that memory, and then when the lithium battery goes down, you lose all the programming. How many of the chips do you believe are damaged, Hal? And is there a way of evaluating how much damage? Now, in other words, a microprocessor chip that simply loses its reference oscillator, all of a sudden everything stops, and it looks like you've got a massive failure, and even though it's only one common source, the reference oscillator. So I wonder what words you can give us of...
What a reset line stays low.
There you go. So is there a way of evaluating how much damage of how many chips as opposed to some common denominator, like a reset line set low or a reference oscillator not running? K6DPZ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW in the TechNet, K6DPZ. Okay, number one went in, has no clock oscillator. Put an external drive for a clock oscillator, thinking maybe just a clock oscillator crystal was shot. Could not get the micro to fire up. The reset line is not put low. There are surface mount ICs on a control board that are hot. This thing has some problems. And MOS devices, when they're hit, will do this, because I've had other equipment come in from across the country and also from Europe that had problems. They were supposed to have one problem. When they came in, they had other problems. So this is why the concern is that the control board is in very bad shape. And it's more cost-effective to replace the control board than try to replace all the surface mount chips that are running warm. Also, the problem is the ASU does not have this board available, and it's not known if they're even in Japan, which I'm trying to check for him now. That's one board. I don't know without that board coming up, being that controls a lot of the other circuits, the phase lock loop and DDS and everything else, what other boards may be damaged. So all the obvious things I checked. I wasn't hatched out of an egg. Go ahead, Dick.
We've never accused you of that, Hal. Eric, have you heard of stories of electronics being shipped, being x-rayed, or otherwise investigated for 9/11-like reasons where significant damage of the electronics takes place? I wonder if you've heard of things like that. Eric, first, and I'm going to then press it over to anyone else on the net that's got any first-hand, second-hand, or even third-hand information along these lines. Eric, K2RIW.
KC2QIQ for that list.
You're on the list, Glenn. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, let me give you a nice little story. We, we go around the world shooting stuff, and the way Sony and Panasonic and a few other the professional camera manufacturers manufacture the CCD block, and a typical cost of a block will be anywhere between $15,000 and $25,000. They actually go through the effort to do a little X-ray shielding because they know they're traveling around, but I think it was about 5 or 8 years ago when what now is the Department of Homeland Security started using one of these higher intensity X-ray units for baggage. And, you know, we've monster cameras these days do not X-ray over it. But we've lost a couple of CCD blocks from the X-ray where it will actually cause damage to the individual cells. So, you know, what these guys are talking about really is not that unusual. I mean, you can buy components that are radiation hardened. For example, when you put stuff out in space, you use radiation hardened components, although the Israelis don't believe in that. They use consumer grade stuff and it works just fine. So, I've had to deal with issues from the X-ray machines, not from the magnetic fields that they're created. But because the intensity is so high and you're talking about a couple of microns of space between the cells, basically what happens is it generates a voltage, arcs over, and burns it out.
So you've suffered damage on the focal plane array of your charge-coupled device, the mosaic of your cameras, and I think you said $15,000 or $20,000 for the repair, and you've run into that problem. Wow. And even though you've made special arrangements, put signs on it, do not x-ray, I think you're saying sometimes it gets x-rayed anyhow, even with those signs and special arrangements. Is that sort of what you're saying, Eric? Go ahead.
No, what I'm saying is that when the airport security, which is now the Department of Homeland Security, started using these higher powered x-ray machines, because in the past it was never an issue. And when you go through the gate, you pass it through the x-ray machine at the gate where you put your laptop and you take your shoes off. Those are very soft x-ray machines. They have very strong photomultipliers behind them. That's why they use very, very weak x-rays. But they started using these baggage machines that's more like a chest x-ray, or even stronger than that. And that's when the problem started occurring. So, you know, everybody now will never shift independently. And if you're going to ship ahead of time, if you don't carry the cameras with you, most guys will carry the cameras with them just for that purpose. But if you're going to ship independently, you have to make arrangements so that it doesn't get x-rayed.
So I think you're saying that your personnel will take the camera as hand baggage, knowing that it's a soft x-ray machine, and therefore it's got a much higher probability of surviving. And I presume that soft x-ray machine, back in the days when people used to use a Kodak film, I think you're saying it would not expose the film. Is that true, Eric?
Right. With the soft x-ray machines, they still don't recommend you take film with an ASA of 800 or higher, because it's going to fog it.
Interesting. Glenn, wait for the beep. You got it, Glenn.
Yeah, oddly enough, I've actually done quite a bit of testing in this area. Way back when, I had to do some rad hardening tests and see what kind of electronic components would actually be affected by this. And interestingly enough, most silicon, believe it or not, microprocessors and MOSFETs and RF transistors and the like, generally don't get affected by this very, very much. Different categories of components do, and really take a beating. Let's just drop for a second. Yeah, the type of components that really take, that really get affected, is anything photosensitive. Optocouplers, boy, you can make an optocoupler lose all of its gain by putting it in front of x-rays. Film, anything with any kind of photosensitive. Hard drives, believe it or not. Hard drives, there's something in the makeup of a hard drive and its makeup that where it actually can erase the hard drive, so, or parts of it. So those are kinds of things that generally you worry about. But what's interesting is what Hal is talking about here is like CMOS and MOS type devices going through x-ray, and even in very, very intense fields, I've never seen them fail. But I can tell you something that really knocks the you-know-what out of these devices is ESD. And when people package things and they send them, it's very important to use the correct bags. And, you know, a lot of times you see packed in with these things is those foam chips inside. And just moving around inside the box, you'd be amazed at what kind of ESD voltages in handling with those insulated materials on the inside can actually generate and really do a number on electronic components. Back to you, Dick. K2RIW, KC2, QIQ.
So I think you're saying polystyrene peanuts and things like that are capable of making very high electrostatic discharge voltages. When that FT-1000 was shipped, though, it's got an outer metallic case. It probably didn't have the microphone or the key jack plugged in, didn't have a 110-volt line cord plugged in, didn't have a coaxial output connector. I'd like to believe that no matter what you do with ESD sensitive materials on the outside of that package, that it shouldn't have been able to reach inside. And what you're saying is that a smart person nowadays will make sure that he is using a pink plastic or black plastic or silverized plastic. In other words, the ESD protective kinds of packaging is what we should be using. But do you really believe, Eric, that polystyrene peanuts on the outside of a metallic package of a FT-1000 can create internal damage? KC2QIQ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Absolutely, Dick. And I've seen it, you know, demonstrated on equipment. And today, see, most of the newer equipment, like if that was, like, say, an FTDX 9000 or a 2000 from Yaesu today, I would say more than likely it probably wouldn't be as likely to happen. But being that the 1000Z, and that board's got like an RS-232 connectors hanging out the back end of it and other things. And, in the earlier, you know, in those years, they didn't really put the protection, like the little